Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hi, and welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast. This is Angela DeCamp, your sort of substitute host for the day. And I am sitting here down with our interviewee. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Michael DeCamp.
He's here on the podcast today to talk about his new book release, which is
Nozomi's Battle.
Dun, dun, dun. So yeah. We're going to be interviewing him a bit here. But before we get started, actually, we have a tradition on the show just to talk about our creative moment of the creative moment of the episode. So, Michael, would you like to participate in that? Do you have any creativity?
Well, yeah, actually I finished that book I was reading in the last episode, The Vampire of New York, by Lee Hunt. And I finished that this week and, I was really pleasantly surprised with it. It was a great little tale, kind of a different take on the Dracula storyline. This author takes it a little further back in contemporary history. It's kind of a split time zone. It's split between
timeline.
That's a better way to put it. The time zones is not the Eastern time zone.
In Indiana, we have a split time zone, but not.
Yeah. Well,
not
most of the country does, but we. It's a split timeline because part of it takes place in 1863. And part of it is modern day. And so it kind of goes back and forth, and there's a bridge over that timeline. But it throws in some historical figures like Mark Twain and, man, I got a throat thing going today.
I think you got
Edwin Booth. It talks about Edwin Booth, whose famous brother is John Wilkes Booth. And then also Edgar Allan Poe is mentioned. And so there's different, even a former president is kind of in the storyline slightly.
So it's sort of like, you've got is it kind of horror or is it more historic fiction?
It's kind of a horror historic fiction. So it's a combination of those two. And, there's not, for those of you who enjoy profanity, this is not your book because it's not full of profanity. It's actually very,
well,
very
I'm
clean.
Out. That's the only reason I read books now is for, I have a little cuss word count that I keep. And if it doesn't have at least 20 cuss words per chapter, I'm out.
Oh, you're out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't read a lot.
but seriously though, it is a horror book, but it's not, It's kind of, I guess I would term it clean horror because it's not got.
Well, I think that, I mean, I honestly feel like there is a place for using profanity if it makes sense for your characters. But if it doesn't, there's no reason to necessarily include, like, as long as you have a good story. And
yeah,
I feel like that's bad.
I think some writers include profanity for the profanity's sake instead of.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a. Modern tool that they use to kind of get around to actually making things happen.
Well, I've recently, actually I haven't read this book, but there is an author that's like kind of tends to be a popular young adult novel author. And she recently wrote her debut adult novel and a lot of people, I haven't read the book, but a lot of people complain. They're like, okay, they're just dropping the F word now. Like that's it. it's the same kind of stuff. They're just squeezing in more cuss words.
Yeah, like, just this is fine. Drop the F bombs for the sake of dropping them.
Well, it's like, it was just kind of like, oh, well, this is an adult book. So now we're going to use, it's like, I don't know, to make it seem more adult-like, but I don't think it needs to.
Well, you think the thing I always go back to is most of the classic authors that I've ever read tended to not use that kind of.
Well, it's like anytime you use your like normal language, sometimes I feel like when you talk to somebody who's sort of every other word is a cuss word, it's not necessarily that I think the common thing people say is like, oh, that person's just so uneducated. They sound uneducated. I don't think that they sound necessarily uneducated. It's just like hard to follow. It's kind of, it's like when people like say like a lot like me. So, I mean, it just kind of, it's hard. It's harder to follow the,
flow of the conversation.
Yeah. It's not as concise. I don't know. I feel like you don't need an overwhelming amount. It just has to make sense with who the character is.
All that to say, The Vampire of New York is a pretty good story.
It didn't suck. I knew I'd make you laugh at that.
That joke bites. It just bites.
Well, you know, see you later.
All right. Well, we're going to get buried. I've been coughing it up here. So enough Dracula jokes. What about you? What's your moment of the episode?
I know this is sad, but I've been still reading the same book for so long. It's that How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi, which has been really good. It's really eye-opening. It kind of makes you think about race in more nuanced, different perspectives than just kind of what you hear a lot. So it's been good, but I'm not going to highlight. I mean, I guess I already did highlight that, but I've done it in previous episodes. So that's kind of why I was trying to not even talk about it, but here I am talking about it. What I wanted to say was that actually my creative moment of the week, of the episode is that I entered into the Harding University's alumni, virtual art show. And my art is in the show. I think there's like a URL, but I don't know it. So
you can probably go to harding.edu and find it.
There's I wouldn't go there. I would go to like their Harding Art and Design Facebook page because they update that. I don't think that Harding really updates their website very well. Very frequently. Also very well. So I'm in that art show virtually. If you like any of my gouache paintings, which is kind of been a lot of what I've been doing lately. Definitely check it out. And there's a lot of other like Harding University alumni that participated in the show that you can kind of go and support them. And that's pretty cool.
Didn't they give you an award already for that?
Yeah, I did. They had places that you could win and I won bronze. So that's nice. I didn't really expect one cause I kind of just threw in some random ones in my, they're still good. So it's nice to participate in that. Yeah. I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah. Good old Harding U. I have my own feelings about them, but, I always had a good experience at the art department. So, you know,
there you go.
But yeah, so I guess that's my creative moment. I mean, I don't have a whole lot else to share cause I there's plenty of Netflix stuff I could probably talk about,
but
we talk about that a lot. So I'll just leave that out this time around.
Yeah. So, why'd you ask me here today?
Well, I asked you to your own dining room, in the house live in.
This is the Cutter's Notch studio.
I love that. You're like, all right, let's cut to the chase and get to my stuff. this is kind of a big deal for you. I'm holding right now in my hand Nozomi's Battle, which is book two of the Cutter's Notch novel series. The Hope. Well, you have like a series title, right?
Cutter's Notch series. I also sometimes refer to the Hope Spencer series.
That's why I was like, I know that you had that somewhere. The Hope Spencer series.
Yeah, you know that's actually been in flux because when I originally
trying to come up with like
when what I to call yeah it. I wrote the first book, Abandoned Hope. It was a Cutter's Notch novel. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think so far ahead
that there might be more outside of
No, I knew there was going to be two or three, probably at least three stories.
No. I'm talking about outside of that series that you're writing, like maybe because you had this, they have the short stories too. Yes. And that's not necessarily part of the Hope Spencer.
Yeah. It's not part of Hope Spencer series, but it's related to the Cutter's Notch stuff. So
it still would be a Cutter's Notch. Sort of a Cutter's Notch, maybe anthology.
Yeah, Cutter's Notch Interludes is the name of the collection. So that's the short stories. But so there was kind of some discussion back and forth between me and my publisher as far as do we call it the Cutter's Notch series or do we call it the Hope Spencer series? And I think we've settled on the Cutter's Notch series to kind of tie even the short story book into the grouping. So it's Cutter's Notch book two. Mm-hmm. Nozomi's Battle.
Yeah. And this is I would say this is a pretty big deal for you. Maybe I'm probably more so than the interludes, because this is just the continuation of the whole story that started it all. Right.
Right. Right.
So you started out, basically in Cutter's Notch in book one, Hope Spencer's kind of the, I don't know that you have more of a cast of characters, but,
right.
but she, it circles around events that happen with her, and she's, mysteriously vanished and kind of what happens, and her friends versus how the adults handle kind of the missing child sort of thing, and her own experience. It's pretty interesting. I don't want to give everything away. I'm guessing you, many of your listeners have probably already read it, but the second book basically picks up. Does it pick up right where the first book ended?
It picks up about 2 weeks after.
Okay. Yes. A fortnight has fallen. I don't know. Goes from there. Now, why don't you tell me, just give me a little idea of how this book continues on, because it seemed like at the end of book one there, I think you left a little bit of a cliffhanger.
Well, but some people would say I left a huge cliffhanger.
This is true. But for the situation of the first book, things were kind of sorted out. So what can you tell us about this book?
Well, at the end of the first one, yeah, the situation revolving Hope was resolved. The initial situation, the initial adventure. But what was left hanging was this relationship with her father, which was pretty scary because he was a pretty volatile person. But just so the readers or the listeners can know, this book is a kind of a fantasy paranormal thriller. So there are fantasy elements and there are paranormal or supernatural elements at play as well. And so at the end of the first book, there's this cliffhanger where the paranormal aspect is tied into her dangerous father. And it leaves you thinking he's coming looking for her. So, and in book two, that's not all of book two, but that's a part of the storyline in book two. So it kind of picks up with that.
I'm encouraged and happy here to see that my favorite characters, Gavin, Gronick, and Smackle, have returned. What are they, like elves or what? Tell me more about them.
Yeah. You know, Gavin, Gronick, and Smackle are the three mysterious friends from the first book that help the two boys, Josh and Danny, and ultimately Rick Anders, the state trooper, although he never got to meet him. But the Gavin, Gronick, and Smackle aid in the attempted rescue. You can read the book to get the details, but basically they are involved in the rescue of Hope Spencer. And yes, they return in book two. And the cool thing about book two is it delves deeper into their world.
All right. That's another thing I was going to ask, because most of book one takes place sort of in the, like, I don't know, the realm we're familiar with, the one that we live in. And so you're saying they spend a little more time maybe in that other world?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We get to meet a variety of additional characters from that world. Mm-hmm. So there's, we get to meet Gavin has actually, this is not a big thing because it happens right at the beginning, but as soon as Gavin reports what happens with Hope Spencer to the queen, there is a queen.
I'm reading that on the back of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. He is summoned to her presence to give a report. And so you get to meet the queen, the queen's court, the queen's bodyguard, and some other interesting characters along the way. So
I am a fan of the fact that there's a woman running the show then. But, you know.
Yes. the royal queen in the queendom. It's the queendom.
The queendom.
Yes. Nice. So it's a... it's kind of a fun little look into the, what I call it, the arboreal, or that's not right. I messed that up.
Arboreal?
Arboreal realm. Yes. So that's the realm of the plants and the trees. So you get to see a little deeper into that realm and some of the other life that's there. So
why don't you tell me a little bit about, like, who this book is written for? and kind of what kind of people would get the most out of this? And
well, I tell you who has given it the most attention. I seem to have a fairly significant following of women who are over the age of 50.
You got an interesting fan club there.
And then also girls between about the age of 11 and 18. So now that's not to say there aren't others that like
that
the
just
story.
Seems to be the demographic that's responding the most to
that
it.
That seems to get the most attention.
I wonder if you'll get more boy interest in this one, because I feel like the first, maybe it's sort of like the younger girls interested because so much of the first book revolves around a young girl about that age. And well, it sounds like more is happening with the younger boys in this book. And
actually, the first big part of the book, Hope's kind of on the shelf.
Yeah.
So she's got a big part to play.
We've abandoned Hope in the second book.
No, she's just, she's kind of, actually, she's frustrated because the boys actually disappear. The boys are, this time it's the boys who disappear. And she's kind of at a loss. She wants to help, but she doesn't really have any way to help. And so she's frustrated. But so this story wraps a lot more around the boys and spends a lot of time with, and particularly with Danny, up through the middle of the book. And then Hope picks up there much more deeply. And Josh comes back into the picture. So it's kind of a mishmash of who the prime characters are.
I always like the second books in series and even in movies, like I feel like they tend to be the most gripping ones. So I'm really interested to see sort of what happens here, especially as far as character development goes. Because the first book, you kind of lay out in general who these people are, you know, this is so-and-so, this is the sheriff, and this is, you know, like you kind of lay out who all these people are. But the second book, I would imagine, probably give you more freedom to develop a bigger picture on each of these characters.
You know, it's funny too, when you write a book and you're starting on the second in the series, then you have people who say, hey, I want to be in your book, you know, and it's like, well, it's fiction, so I can't put you in the book.
Yeah.
But he's not my boss now, but he was my boss. He's like, I want to be in the book.
And, can we say this person's name? Should we give him a shout out?
Well, yeah, his name is Scott Havener, and he wanted to be in the book. And he was like, I want to be a villain, but I don't want to be as bad as those other villains.
Well, then it's boring.
It's like, well, hey, you know, if you're going to be in the book,
your taxes in the book, I guess.
Yeah. If you're going to be in the book, you know, it's up to where my imagination takes it. So, you know, I'm not making any promises. And then,
beggars can't be choosers.
And then I've got my cousin, Randy, wanted to be in the book.
Yeah.
Randy. Hello, Randy Moisner. He wanted to be in the book. And, He didn't want to be a villain. But again, you know, it's kind of up to my imagination on where I go with it. But the cool thing about Randy is he has a twin brother. And
your cousin Randy?
My cousin Randy has a twin brother, and his name is Gator. Oh, actually, his first name is Gator. He had it legally changed. To Gator. So I actually smushed the two together and created a character called Gator. His name is Gator Randall. So I put them in the book. And
are there other characters then that like you've based off of specific people?
No, not so much.
I know you've borrowed some names.
I borrowed some names.
I've recognized all of these names. I'm like, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gavin, Gronick, and Smackle, I borrowed their names from people I work with. Those are actual last names.
And I was kind of curious. The thing that I thought was so funny when I was reading the first book, and I don't know if I ever told you this, was just that, you know, you've got these little interesting creatures, and one's like Gronick and one's Smackle and the other one's just Gavin, you know, like I was like, it's like these weird creature names. And then this one's like a frat boy name. Like where did this come from? But what you were saying was that it's, go ahead and tell me why those were the names.
Well, I just, I, I, I needed to come up with three. And the first one I wanted Gavin's name. I wanted one of them to be Gavin. And then, but I thought, well, these things are elves, right? So, they can't just be all ordinary names.
Yeah, it's gotta be like Brian.
And so I'm trying to think, what should I call them? And, I came up with, this guy's name I'm using is one of my coworkers. Who else do I have? And I've got a friend named Todd Smackle, and I borrowed Todd's last name for that. And then I had a really good friend named Mike Gronick, and so Gronick Smackle and Gavin
Smackle's my favorite. I just like saying the name Smackle.
There you go. And then in the book two, you get to meet my friend Phil will be. He'll get a kick out of this, but his last name is Dargo. So you get to meet an elf named Dargo. Oh, okay. You get to meet an elf named Maxon, an elf named Maxel, an elf named Dorcas. And then the queen herself, her name is Agape Hesed.
Oh, wow. So, wonder what that means.
you can look that up if you want to, but her name is Agape Hesed. So anyway... That's the kind of the fun names that I got for those in the elf world. But my former boss and my cousin both wanted to be in it, so I've incorporated them into there in some way, shape, or form.
So here's a question: when you compare this book with your first one, you know, what have you learned along the way, and what makes this book different, and why should people take that? This is three questions in one. You know, why continue? Like, tell me, give me the hook here.
Well, the why continue is because the story kept going in my head.
Yeah.
You know, so I finished the first one, and when I finished it, I had this cliffhanger moment that I wrote. Mm-hmm. Well, I wrote the moment. I've got to write the rest of the story now. So, you know, it was really just something I really needed to complete a lot of it for myself. But then I had a lot of people who read it.
And they wanted to know.
They want to know what happens next. There have been people bothering me I shouldn't say bothered.
They're irritating you.
It's not been an irritation. But basically they've been in a very nice and in a way that really I get a kick out of. But they've been kind of nagging me for the rest of the story for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, when I wrote the first one, in your mother... read it, she was like, well, you better start writing the second one.
Yeah, like you can't just do that and not. Yeah. But I think too, like if you wanted to, you didn't have to make another one. You could have just let it live in your mind.
I could have done that, and then I would have had a lot of people out there kind of disappointed. It's kind of like when you watch a TV show for a while and it comes right down to, and you got a cliffhanger at the end, and then
don't
they cancel it.
Remind me, I'm so upset. Can we stop? I just finished rewatching The OA. And it's got such a good cliffhanger at the end. Like it was supposed to be set up for 5 seasons, only got 2. And I'm mad. I would read a book about it. I just want to know what happens. Like I can't imagine it. Only they can imagine it.
Over the years, I've gotten angry more than once at network television for doing just that, leaving a cliffhanger at the end of a season and then canceling.
There are a lot of shows that they've done that, especially within this pandemic. I know one that my sister and I both really liked was Glow. And I think they did like 2 or 3 seasons, and we were all ready to, you know, see the final season, let it, you know, see what happens. And then they decided just to cancel it because they're like, oh, people won't want to wait for it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's all we have to do right now is wait. Like I'm patient. I'm fine. It's going to be okay. Like it's still going to be good. But
yeah,
we waited like 2 years for Game of Thrones series, is longer than that on some of them.
I think it was a year and a half, at least once.
I think the last one came.
It was a long time.
Yeah.
And then it was a disappointment.
Well, yeah, I guess if you're going to do it good.
Yeah, do it well.
Do it well.
Don't rush it. Don't rush it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, that's really what drove me was the combination of the story was still going on in my head. So I had to continue writing it. But also, you know, I had a lot of fans who were reading the first book and they want to know what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a significant cliffhanger at the end, and it's like, okay, I need to wrap that up. And so, I also need to keep that in mind because I started working on book 3 I've written the prologue and some of chapter one. And
right, so we got another cliffhanger coming in our future.
Well, there's a cliffhanger in book two a bit. So I've started working on that, but I really don't think I want the series to go beyond three. So I need to wrap it up.
It's okay. I mean, you could, if you need to, you can do a fourth book.
Well, life is uncertain and you don't know how things are going to unfold next. You know, so there be some unanswered questions at the end of that.
And I would say, Dad, I would argue life is a highway. You know, you got to write it all night long. You got to write it all.
Isn't there a song like that? Life is a highway.
No, I don't think so. but so you... Having this been, you've written more than just obviously this book and the first book at this point. So now that you've been through this many, would you say like, was the second book of this series easier to write because you've written so many books now, or was it more challenging, you know, continuing the story when it wasn't your original thing that you conceived?
Well, I worked my way through it much more quickly.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that book three is even quicker than that. And many of the readers may very well feel the same way. They don't want to wait that long, but it was much quicker working through it. And a lot of the technical details of creating a book I already had experienced. And so I had that to lean back on. So it did make the process much quicker. I didn't do things a whole lot different in the sense that I write kind of the same way. I write in spurts. Mm-hmm. So I will write a section. And then when I get to the end of that section, then my brain is conjuring up the next section. Mm-hmm. And I work on that in my head before I sit down at the computer. And then I work that up. So that process kind of stayed the same. The post-writing process was similar. I went through it again a couple of times on my own. Then I got some beta readers, not as many this time. I think I only had three beta readers this time. What was different is I used an actual paid editor. Well, I had a paid editor last time, but it was through the company
the previous company that you used. Yeah,
the previous company that I used to publish. This time I used an independent editor that I paid, and she was really helpful. She really loved the story, but she had corrections from beginning to end. And, you know, you think after you've done one whole book and you've learned that whole process that, hey, surely, you know, I write perfectly now. Well, no.
Yeah, no, I don't think that anybody can write perfectly. I'm applying to grad school. I'm writing a personal statement to apply. I'm like, oh, this is easy. Just a page, you know, what do I want? What do I stand for? And I also like sent it out to several people to look at and give me edits. And a couple of people gave me like a few pointers. And then I got a shout out to my friend Mark. He took it and tore it up, which is exactly what I wanted though. Because like, I think that there's some parts about writing or any kind of creation that like you see as the artist, as the creator, as the writer, that there's also a part of it that you just don't see. You can't see. You're too close to it. You need somebody else to kind of take it and provide a different perspective on it. And I think that's a really important part.
Right.
But yeah, I'm glad that you were able to have all of those notes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So it's a fun process, actually. The whole creative process, it takes a long time. But it's very satisfying.
I would say I would imagine it's freeing to just know the process now. Like when you're first starting writing, it's like, I'm going to write, then I guess I'll figure out how to get it published. And then you realize that it was a much bigger process, which I think we've already discussed on here at length. But well, now that you know what the process is, it's like, oh, well, you can maybe play with it some.
Yes. But the interesting thing
you
is,
seem like you disagree.
Well, no, not completely. I definitely can play with it more. It is freeing in that sense, but I would not sit here and tell you that I completely understand the process. I think there are still aspects of writing and publishing because there's the writing part and there's the publishing part, and understanding that whole part of it is still a work in progress for me. So like I've got a website. I didn't have a website really. The first company that helped me publish created a website for me. They managed the whole thing, and right. I didn't have a clue.
Have any real freedom to do much with that?
Well, I could mess around with some of the layouts and the pictures and stuff, but I didn't understand the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's this. I kept being encouraged to start a newsletter. I still haven't gotten the newsletter going. So this is something I'm still learning. And part of that is the whole point of the newsletter is to get an email list. So
don't sign up for the newsletter, guys, unless you want your email out there.
No.
Well, you said you were transparent, so.
That's not the case.
All
that's
right.
You just said something that was not true. So okay. The idea in creating the newsletter is so that I can collect emails. Yeah, that's correct, but they're not going to be out there. I'm not sending them out there. The idea is that I have an email list so that when I write future works, I've got an immediate
right. So group hopefully,
of people I can present it to.
Yeah, and if you're signed up for the newsletter, you want that information.
Right, right. And that's part of it. They're signing up to get additional information. So, for example, I just this week on my website, which is authormicheldecamp.com, I just this week have a subscription thing that pops up. So if you go to authormicheldecamp.com, one of the first things that comes up is an opportunity to subscribe to this newsletter that I've still yet to develop, but where they can subscribe to it now, but it's not like they don't get anything for that. I'm giving them a free short story. So if you subscribe and you can use they send you an email to confirm. And if you confirm, you actually get a PDF of one of my short stories, one that's not published in the Cutter's Notch Interludes. It's not related to Cutter's Notch, but it's a free short story that I'm trading for their email address.
That's
and
cool.
The idea is in the future that when I do write a newsletter, it'll be emailed to them. If I write a blog, they will get notified. And when I have another release for some other book, they would be notified.
So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I understand how newsletters kind of generally work. What I don't understand is why you're not sending it out by a scary raven, you know, and like a carrier raven instead of email, because it seems like that would be the cool thing. The cover of your newest book has like some silos on it and this creepy looking raven.
Well, so. I would. Is that a raven or a crow?
I don't know. They all look the same. They're the same kind of bird, right?
Well, in the story. There is a silo in the story that plays heavily in the story.
Okay.
And there is a crow that plays heavily in the story. So that's kind of the...
I'm not an ornithologist.
Supposed to be making... it might be a raven. I don't know what's... In the story, it's
neither
a crow.
Neither of us know what they really look like.
In the story, it's a crow.
All right, it's a big black bird.
So anyway.
But in general, so you say you have a website. Can you buy this book off of the website, or are there other places?
There are links on the website. So if you go to the website, in fact, I need to update it with the link for Nozomi's Battle. But if you click on the Buy Now button on the website, it takes you to Amazon. So I don't have a market thing right on the website. It links you over to Amazon to buy it.
Cool. Or they could probably reach out directly to you.
Yeah. AuthorMichaelDeCamp@gmail.com. Or there's actually a new email.
Well, let's keep it simple this time around.
AuthorMichaelDeCamp@gmail.com. You can contact me if you want an autograph version. I can sign. I've got a supply of all my books, so I can sign them.
He signs them in blood so that it fits along with the theme.
Crow's blood. No. Elf blood. It's elf blood.
It's worse.
Yeah, that is worse because they're
just imagining
good characters.
Like a Keebler elf here. It's really sad.
So, no, I can sign them and I can ship them off to you. So I can do PayPal or Venmo, things like that.
We're flexible. Payment. We'll make it happen.
Or you can mail me a check and I'll mail you the book. But either way, we can do it something like that. But I'm happy to oblige. I took one to church today. Actually, I had someone sent me a message that I go to church with, and they were like, can you bring it Sunday? And I got there. And the cool thing was this woman's granddaughter had me visit her school about a month ago. And it was about an hour away from here. And she had me come in and talk to her middle school English class, which was a blast.
What were you talking about?
About Abandoned Hope.
The first book.
Yeah, about the first book, because the young woman read it, you know, the eighth grader. She read the book and just absolutely loved it. Actually, it's her great-grandmother that bought the book today. But her grandmother told me that she wasn't really a reader before this,
reading it.
But then she just absolutely loved this book, and she can't wait for the second book.
Aww.
And so I went to that school, and I got to talk to her whole class, and she got an A+ on the project, which was awesome. And, well, I walk in with the book for her great-grandmother this morning,
yeah,
and she's there.
And okay.
So she jumped up and waved at me. She's all excited. She had to see the book, and she's sitting there flipping through it. And so, you know, it's those kinds of things that makes all this work kind of worthwhile. So
yeah, knowing that other people really get enjoyment out of, yeah, out of that, it makes it really, yeah, special.
And I enjoyed going to the school. You know, that was a blast talking to the class of eighth graders in the English class and getting to know the teacher and the principal and mm-hmm. all that. So mm-hmm. fun. Let me think about it. Was it Shenandoah Middle School, I think?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it matters.
I'm sure it's Shenandoah Middle School in Indiana. So shout out to all you Shenandoah Middle Schoolers. So, yeah, cool.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add with your story before we
move
along?
No. I got to tell you, I really love the book. I would read it like this. If you've not read any of them, start with Abandoned Hope. Then get the Cutter's Notch interludes and read the short story. They aren't directly tied to this storyline, but they have background information on some characters and on certain places. And a couple of the stories tie into what's going to be in the third story.
Okay.
So it's not directly required reading, but it would be important. So Abandoned Hope, then Cutter's Notch interludes, and then
Nozomi's Battle.
And then I don't have a title for book three yet.
I was going to ask, any ideas of what you might call it?
No. You know, usually the title reveals itself as I write mm-hmm. along.
Kind of makes sense with how the plot forms.
Right. And you may wonder, well, where in the world did the name or a title Nozomi's Battle come from? I will just tell you.
It sounds like a pizza place battle, honestly.
No, it's actually, if you look it up, Nozomi is a Japanese word. And if you read deeper, okay, if you Google it, the first answer may not be all the information.
Maybe so, you need to read the book to really understand.
Yes, that would be good. So anyway, that's it. That was the thing. So yeah, I don't know what the third book's going to be called yet.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait excitedly. Hopefully you can write it quickly so we don't have to wait too long.
There you go. All right.
Well, that's, I guess those are all the questions I had, unless there's anything else you wanted to share with us, or we could do a random question. I didn't have anything planned.
Well, unless you can think of one, I guess, because you've been doing it off the internet. Last time we actually pulled one out of the box, since you weren't here.
No, I have made some of them up, so I'm not all the way out of it. But
we'll make one up.
Usually,
you got 10 seconds.
You're the main interviewer, so I have time to come up with these things. So I feel like you should come up with a good
question. I feel like all these questions have been random questions today.
But they're related to your book. It's a natural conversation line.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. I don't know that I have a real random question today, unless you can think of something.
Yeah.
There's no point.
Well, I will say this. You know, you asked me earlier who this book was really written for. And I didn't probably share everything I wanted to share there. And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
This book really was really, I guess it was written initially for me. Because I had the story in my head and I had to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I've been told that it's kind of a cross between a middle grade and a young adult book. Like I said, I've had a number of older adults, particularly older women, that really enjoyed it. But that's not exclusive. I've had older men. I've had middle-aged men and women and young, like 20s and 30s, really, really enjoy mm-hmm. the story. So I think it's enjoyable for pretty much anybody of all ages. It's probably a little dark. The story's a little dark for anyone under about 12.
They probably read dark stuff already.
Probably, but if you're a parent and you're wondering, As the author, I would say that there are certain kids that are under about 12 that might not be appropriate.
If you're a kid and you're trying to sneak read it, get it at this library. I was trying to help you out.
Here's some
local bookstores. Yeah,
you're trying to get us in trouble here, I think.
I'm not. I'm off the hook. It's you that's in trouble.
So anyway, it's a dark, kind of a dark story, but it's super. It's kind of a fantasy supernatural thriller. I found that there are really people of all ages have enjoyed it, but those are the ones that have seemed
really clicked with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's it. Thanks for interviewing me and letting me share about my new book release. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, we all are. I'm excited about it for you as well.
And those of you out there, please remember to go to my website and subscribe to my non-existent newsletter so I can have your email.
give us your email.
But you will get
stick them up.
You will get a free short story
at the very least.
The name of the short story is Under the Crimson Shade. That's the name of the short story you'll get. It's kind of a action-packed thriller story, too. So
watch out. Keep on your toes. Okay. And I also want to throw out a thank you to Bill Whitehair for editing this as usual.
Yes. Bill does a nice job. In fact, I don't know if you probably haven't noticed yet, but should be on this episode when it gets released, but we changed the intro and the outro.
Yeah, I actually heard that you guys did that and you didn't talk to me at all about it, and I would be good at it.
Well, so was your mother. Your mother did a good job.
I don't know. I think that she probably manipulated you into...
I think she has good vocal skills.
Debatable.
Yeah, she gets into her NPR voice.
Yeah, she gets really quiet. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to hearing that. And and thanks to Bill Whitehair again.
Yeah, and leave us a...
rating, review. If you like what you hear, definitely post something about us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this. So
and share the link on your social media so other people can find it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Take care.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.